Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Other Modern. I'm your host, Pipsqueak, and I'm joined today by Canterbury Egg and Dodger, two of the top eight finishes for this latest GP, and some of the more spiky brewers of this format. And we're going to be talking today about the, well, it was originally the 10, and now it's the 13. 13/16, depending on how you count it, because we got a little bit generous with how we grouped cards together. But the most busted cards in MSCM that you aren't playing. So this is a very clickbaity, listical approach, but I do think there's something genuinely interesting here, which is there are a lot of busted cards in MSCM that no one plays. Not even cards that are just, like, hypothetically busted, but cards that are very transparently, obviously, incredibly powerful. And so I wanted to talk about some of them. So we threw together a list, and we're going to be starting with the ones that are, and just trying to kind of escalate with every one we take up. But this isn't a, you know, strict tier list, of course. I think all of these cards are kind of insane.
Yeah, I think the way we scaled them is mostly like the top of the list has the highest ratio of bustedness to lack of playedness. If that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think in terms of kind of power level ceiling is the other
one we're
looking at here. Egg, do you want to start us off? Because these two cards are near and dear to your heart.
I will gladly start us off. All right. Coming in at number 10 on our list are two cards from Altabac, the only ones with, I believe, playable iterations of the Concord mechanic. And these are Seismic Colossus and Sights Beyond. Sights Beyond, one mana enchantment, enters the battlefield, scry 3, and at the beginning of your upkeep, if there are four or more card types among permanents you control, you draw a card. So, with all things going correctly, this is a one mana draw an additional card every turn. And in fact, that if I'm familiar with how Magic the Gathering is played, is potentially very powerful.
The other one could say.
Yeah. Seismic Colossus, which is an 8-mana 5/5 with a bunch of keywords, and it costs 4 less if you have 4 or more card types among permanents you control.
And so, notably among those keywords is Haste, which is the main reason I actually wanted to put it on this list, because this card has immediate board impact. And life gain, right? Life
link. Yeah, life link is also really important because
it helps you stabilize, like, immediately versus
aggro. Yeah.
Yeah, so I've played these cards in a list where they were bad. And even in a list where they were bad and I was casting Seismic Colossus for 8 mana, it was still winning the game. Which, you know, the potential power of these cards. You know, Sights Beyond was often just 1 mana Scry 3, which is a terrible rate. Seismic Colossus was an 8 mana 5/5 that won the game when I cast it. But, like, in a list where you were turning on Concord, and I had these cards very frequently in my, you know, no other permanent types deck. And it would have been, if I could consistently turn on Concord, I would have drawn, you know, 8 additional cards a game. I would have cast 3-4 mana 5/5s with Haste and Lifelink. And it's just like, these cards have so much obvious power to them. The only reason people aren't playing them is because the only decks where they've shown up have been actively terrible. If we find the shell for them, they're going to vastly overperform with how they look, which is crazy because I think I've seen 4 or 5 different people over the past 2 weeks mention how Sights Beyond looks nuts.
Yeah, I have really been trying to make Seismic Colossus in particular work, but I think it actually requires a pretty, like, it's harder than it looks to make it, to make Concord Beyond early enough of the time.
One thing I want to note on Sights Beyond is it's bizarre how frustrating it's been to find the right shell for it. Because Sights Beyond, when you look at it, so Seismic Colossus, you need Concord before you cast it, which I think is a much bigger hoop than Sights Beyond,
right?
Which you can cast before you have Concord and just get the benefit of Concord down line. Because Sights Beyond is an enchantment and you already have a land because you cast it, so you only need 2 more card types. So if you have an artifact creature, or a planeswalker and an artifact, or a creature and a planeswalker, you know, those sorts of combinations, it's on. And we have a bunch of cards that just, the 3-card combination of, like, Island, Sights Beyond, Union Rail, Strike Breaker, plus any non-creature spell turns it on. That I think on paper, it should be ludicrously easy to build around, but just for whatever reason, the card attracts people to playing bad cards, and I feel like this is a card that really wants to be slotted into just a deck full of good cards.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest issues with this card is that any iteration of a deck that I've seen playing Sights Beyond has been playing it with the hope that their opponent won't interact with them so they can just keep Concord on, which is a terrible strategy. It was a terrible strategy before we encouraged people to interact, and it's a much more terrible strategy now that we are just seeing a bunch of people interacting all the time. Because, like, you can play Sights Beyond and then your Strikebreaker, and then when your Strikebreaker dies, if you just have a bunch of non-creature spells in your hand, your Sights Beyond has done nothing. So you have to build the deck with the assumption in mind that your opponent is going to try to disrupt your Concord and figure out how to make a robust deck that can still keep it on despite that.
I think with that in mind, it's probably going to be easiest to have cards that either like that can create multiple types at once, so like either artifact creatures or like a planeswalker that creates a creature token, because then that presents two different permanents for your opponent to deal with, and it's hard for them to just blank that with one removal spell. Also, maybe if your deck happens to be running cards with like investigate effects or that generate lotus petals or whatever, I agree with what you said, Egg, that like it's actually pretty difficult to build a deck that's like, this is a Concord deck. I am Concording. This is my plan every game. Because if your deck is going to be really, really good at Concording and nothing else, it's probably just going to fold to any sort of interaction.
The other thing I would mention on that front, because this is something that I heard someone bring up, is the fact that Sights Beyond bites it to Pithwill looks like a problem at glance, but I don't think it actually is. Because because Sights Beyond, you know, is one blue mana, scry 3. And if it also makes your opponent discard a card, that's really close to just a much better preordain.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't actually worry about the Sights Beyond hitting it, eating it, and I wouldn't worry about your lands dying. So what you should really try to do is find four drops that enable it. So something like Bolt of Hearth would be where I would be at.
That's a good one.
That's a 4-drop planeswalker that also makes artifact creatures.
Yeah.
And is a, like,
oh, that's great. That gives you 3 different types at once.
Yeah. So even if all your lands get blown up, you're...
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the sad thing about using 4-drops to turn on your Concord means that you can't cast Seismic Colossus on curve.
Oh. Womp.
So you might have to settle for a turn 5 Seismic Colossus instead of just turn 4.
That is just unacceptable. I don't know if I will ever survive.
You know what? Yeah, scrap it. Take it off the list.
Yeah, I really don't think a 4-mana 5/5 Vigilance Trample Lifelink Haste that comes down on turn 5 is good enough for this format. God. which we might get to a little bit higher up. All right, so number 9 is one I put on this list because this is a card that has been on my radar for the past like year and a half, but I still haven't figured out a deck that I'm satisfied with it in. And it is The Sun's Last Setting. So it is red, black, and white for an enchantment. And at the beginning of each player's end step, that player chooses non-land permanents they control, an artifact, a creature, an enchantment, and a planeswalker, then sacrifices the rest. This is an insanely powerful effect. This is a 3-mana repeated sweeper that just every turn says, you can't go wide. You can't build up a bunch of different value walkers. You can't build up a bunch of different value enchantments. If you have multiple clues or mana rocks, you don't get to keep them. And just keeps doing that every turn for the rest of the game for 3 mana. Now, it is symmetrical, but if you know this is coming, you can actually build around it pretty easily. And the fact that this hoses enchantments as well as all those other card types means it just instant... Most of the decks in our format that like enchantments like having a lot of enchantments. You know, there are things like Dead Man's Party Villainy builds run a bunch of enchantments. And usually, as a, you know, white, black, red deck, you could probably handle one villainy. You just can't handle two. The good news is you never have to handle two. And especially because a bunch of control decks are trying to go wide with Children of the Clouds as win cons. Enchantment spam decks are popping up on occasion. This card just feels unbeatable in a lot of board states. but the deck building restrictions that it asks are pretty huge. So I think that's the main reason we haven't seen it yet. But I think it is definitely underplayed.
Yeah, I think it's more about like what shell you can actually fit it in, because it is pretty restrictive. First of all, it's Mardu colors, which honestly, I haven't really seen a Mardu deck show up in any event I've played in. And that's a bit near the here and no there. But your deck also has this additional restriction of like, okay, to get the most out of this, you can't be going wide with creatures or artifacts or planeswalkers or whatever. You got to have like a little bit of everything if you want to actually be able to commit to the board while this is in play. And your deck could also just not be a permanent focused deck, which is fine. And this card is still good. So maybe that's the route you want to take.
So one thing to keep in mind is it is non-land permanents.
Mm-hmm.
So Intrepid plus creature lands does still work.
Yeah.
And allows you to get around your opponent's one creature. That's also a drawback, though, because Intrepid plus creature lands is one of the go-to win cons right now for control decks.
Yeah.
The other good news I would point to about the Sun's Last Setting is it makes Edicts much more powerful. And some of this format's best removal is in the form of Edicts. Not just Exeunt, but the now less played Memento Mori used to be a format staple for a reason. And I feel like one of the things that kind of pushed Edicts out of the format a little bit, not that they ever like fully left, but made them less prevalent, was these go wide creature strats that really punished them. And this just kind of puts that firmly back in the spot of Edict decks.
Yeah, so this is a card that I believe I know why people aren't playing it. And I believe the reason people aren't playing it is because anytime anyone sees a black deck that wants to play an enchantment main board, they immediately put Villainy in, and you cannot play Sun's Last Setting in a Villainy deck because you'll just kill your own Villainies. The format obsession with Villainy definitely pushes other enchantments out of the format, especially when those enchantments, well, rather it pushes the Sun's Last Setting out because the Sun's Last Setting can't be played with other enchantments.
I actually want to briefly note, So I built a version of this deck that I didn't end up getting the chance to test. But my plan versus decks that this wasn't actually a good piece against was to board out all four copies of the Sun's Last Setting and board in four copies of Villainy. Because presumably they're not boarding in enchantment removal if my Sun's Last Setting was dead. And if I don't need Sun's Last Setting, I'm already running a bunch of black spells because they're the best removal and interaction and card draw, and we've had this conversation before. So may as well be a Villainy deck instead. So I think you can still do it. It's just kind of funky.
Yeah, I think that a Sun's Last Setting deck can be a Villainy deck, but you cannot have them as the same main deck.
Yeah, undoubtedly.
Yeah, I mean, legitimately, you cannot. but I do think it's worth mentioning one more time, just restating that Children of the Clouds is one of the best reasons to try to build a Sun's Last Setting deck, because so many control decks are using that as their finisher. And if you make a control deck's finisher a 1-1 bird, you can probably deal with that over the course of a game.
Yeah. The other thing I would note on that front is this also kind of messes up... it messes up control decks that are trying to use Rock Roll as a win con, and I think those decks are going to start coming back soon.
That's true.
All right. Egg, why don't you read off the next ones for us?
Yeah, so these are, well, one of these is a pet card of mine. One of them is a card that I've never put into a deck and hopefully never will have to. these are two of the busted low mana artifact mana generators that we have, which are largely unexplored, and those are Imperial Mox and Wilted Lotus. Imperial Mox is a legitimate Mox. Zero mana, tap, add a colorless mana. Activate this ability only if you have less life and control fewer creatures than each opponent. Now, that's a bit of a hoop to have to jump through, especially against a format where a lot of decks aren't playing many creatures, but it's still zero mana for a mana rock, and that has to be good somewhere. The other one, Wilted Lotus, is a one mana artifact that enters the battlefield tapped. And then it does the chromatic star, chromatic sphere thing, except instead of adding one mana, it adds two. So it is actually a Lotus. This is just a Lotus petal that also draws you a card. The fact that Wilted Lotus hasn't found more homes kind of puzzles me, honestly, because its power level is so obvious right off the bat. It nets you mana, it draws you a card. It is exactly what you want in some sort of fast combo deck. Imperial Mox, I'm not surprised, hasn't found as many homes because it's harder to build a deck where this hoop is always going to be on for you, especially when you might have to modulate the number of creatures your opponent has towards more somehow. Like, you know, the Forbidden Orchard style, where you need your opponent to have a creature to turn on your better cards. But clearly, a zero mana artifact that gives you mana is a powerful card. Magic the Gathering has proved that to us time and time again.
I think... Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay, so my thoughts on these are Wilted Lotus in particular seems very underplayed. Basically, as you said, like, any deck that is interested in mana and cards should probably be running Wilted Lotus. Obviously, the drawback is that you have to invest in mana and you have to wait a turn. However, most decks can usually do this. It's not that big of a deal to play this like a couple turns before you plan a combo off. It also does help a lot with mana filtering if you're supposed to be trying to cast like multiple different cards that have double pip converted mana costs in like your three color combo deck or whatever. So I think Wilted Lotus in particular just seems like a very generically good card that should probably be seeing more play in combo decks. Imperial Mox, I think the issue with Imperial Mox is that it's very meta dependent on like whether or not it's going to be on most of the time, because there isn't really a good Forbidden Orchard equivalent or like a good, efficient, reliable, cheap way to give your opponent creatures that I know of, at least. And I think if you want your Imperial Mox to have a huge impact for like the zero mana, you need to have it easily triggerable in the early turns of the game. So I think that's why Imperial Mox hasn't really found a home yet, is because it's kind of a meta dependent thing.
Yeah. So I was the one who put Imperial Mox on this list, and my defense on it is we have a fair number of aggro decks, and even the non-aggro decks do frequently play to the board in the early turns. Like, we have tempo decks, we have mid-range decks, we have a lot of decks looking to cast dorks. It's possible this isn't a good GP card, because in GPs, people tend to veer a lot more towards control. But in leagues, people are non-stop trying to test their aggro decks. So I think you can usually guarantee your opponent has more creatures than you without a Forbidden Orchard. Just don't play that many creatures. And having less life also is very easy. You get hit by one creature and suddenly you're at less life, or you have to shock fetch and now you're at less life. And I feel like the fact that you get to run four copies of a zero mana mana rock is just insanely powerful. I think the thing is, it looks like a build-around type of card, even though it isn't. Mm-hmm. And you also need to be prepared to board it out versus creatureless decks, which feels really bad.
Yeah. I also think the fact that it's a zero mana artifact means that we've seen a lot of decks that are trying to abuse artifact synergies in one way or another. So the fact that it's an artifact for zero mana is also something that should be taken into consideration. And any of these artifact decks that aren't generating tokens might want this.
Crazy Train should have been running this, for instance.
Yeah, that sounds
good. It doesn't play any creatures, and it, you know, generally will be behind on life. So why not have access to a zero mana thing that can potentially tap for mana? Or, like, basically all of our artifact combo decks, which we've had several of. I do think, actually, and while you were saying your analysis of Wilted Lotus, I realized I should probably just try jamming this in random control decks.
It definitely doesn't seem bad in those either.
You know, the fact it replaces itself reduces the opportunity cost of itself a lot. And just playing your threat one turn ahead of curve or like playing your board wipe one turn ahead of curve can't kind of make or break a lot of matchups.
I actually like the idea of just in your control deck passing a turn with this up, and then your opponent has to play into one extra mana potentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially because it allows you to do the Golden Glade thing, where you can potentially counter someone's play off of a basic forest.
Basic
forest plus Wilted Lotus represents perfect anti-magic, correct?
Right.
Is it any combination of colors?
I believe it's any one color, so it does not work with anti-magic.
Got it. Yeah. Two mana of any one color. Okay, but still you can cast like any of your other counter spells.
Mm.
Yeah, and Wilted Lotus with anti-magic is still great. It's just not quite as obscene.
Yeah, it's not Gilded Glade tier.
Yeah.
thankfully. All right. So let's go to the next one.
All right, I can take that one.
Sounds good.
All right, we are at number six on the list, I believe. Number six, yeah.
Correct.
Number seven. Whoops.
Seven.
Yeah. Number seven is two cards that kind of represent more of like an archetype, and that is Banished Companion and Plasma Addict. So Banished Companion is a 1-mana 2/2 in red with haste, and whenever it attacks, it deals 2 damage to you. Plasma Addict is a 2-drop blue and red creature. It costs a blue and a red. It's a 3/3 with flying and haste. The drawback is whenever another player casts a spell that targets it, they gain control of Plasma Addict. So the reason these two cards are on the list is generally like as a kind of way of us like acknowledging that I think aggro, and particularly like burn style aggro, is very, very underplayed for how good it is. Both of these cards are phenomenal aggro 1 and 2 drops, and are good in either like the same deck or in different decks. I think with Plasma Addict in particular, I think everyone can see why Banished Companion is good, because as an aggro deck, you care more about reducing the opponent's life total, and reducing your life total by the same amount is really not a drawback. The drawback with Plasma Addict, the fact that your opponent can steal it with a spell that targets it, is actually not that big a deal, because most cards that people are running to target your creatures are just going to kill your creatures anyway.
Yeah, the one exception on that front I can see is if you have like a 1/1, or if you have a 2/2 and Plasma Addict, they can descend upon the helpless, the Plasma Addict, to steal it.
Yeah. But
that's not actually that absurd, especially because Plasma Addict is going to be tapped because you attacked with it, and so you'll get another attack in.
Mm. You could also just not run creatures that have less than 3 power if you really want to get around that.
Yeah, that's
although they can have a creature that they can have a creature that has less than 3 power actually, so that's probably not worth it. But still,
So these also came up. Spoilers for the hot take episode that is currently on air that Caillou is working on editing. But these cards are very, very relevant in that episode. And shortly after that episode, I said, I should try playing that deck. I bet it's decent. And sure enough, I 5-0'd with it. I don't think I played against either of you in that.
I don't remember playing against this deck. Was it a blue red burn?
Yeah. But I did beat, I beat either one or two villainy decks.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I also got a control deck who had turn two Guiding Light on the play. I got them down to 1 life before I lost. So,
wow,
the deck is insanely powerful.
Yeah.
And sees effectively no play. Burn has had near zero representation over the past like God knows how many GPs. And I think there's definitely a perception that aggro is bad in this format, and I just simply do not believe that to be the case.
Personally, I think it's less of a perception that aggro is bad and more of like people just don't think it's fun.
That's also possibly fair. Although people definitely claim aggro is bad as an excuse as to why they don't play it.
Yeah, I see. I think aggro with reach in particular is very, very good, because oftentimes control decks like villainy will count on stabilizing at sometimes pretty low levels of life before they climb back out of range. So if you have any modicum of reach to finish them off, even after they potentially resolve a villainy, like that's a very good strategy, I think. So I would actually say burn is probably the best aggro deck to play against villainy. Because like you can, like, even if they remove all your creatures, you can still finish them off potentially.
Yeah, I think lava spikes, in particular burn decks that favor lava spikes to the mid game, are much better against villainy. Like, I think if you're more creature oriented, like red deck win style, you're going to struggle once they get a villainy out, if they get to untap with it,
because yeah,
they usually out life gain the bit of burn you have. But if you're planning to go like one drop, two drop, three lava spikes, you usually can kill them before they untap with a villainy.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. One thing that I do want to mention about these two cards before we move on, is that these look like they fit the typical mold of bigger than average burn creatures with a real drawback, kind of like Goblin Guide. But I think that the drawback on specifically these two cards is so negligible compared to Goblin Guide, where your opponent is realistically going to draw, you know, two extra cards maybe if you attack with it four times. Banished Companion dealing damage to you only matters against decks that are trying to race you. It's not like you're registering Banished Companion and then really fretting about the idea of a villainy deck burning you down from 12 rather than from 20. If you're registering Banished Companion, your goal is to beat a villainy deck before they can cast spells, right?
Yeah.
And the only matchup in which that damage matters is against something that's trying to burn you out faster, which I just don't think really exists.
I mean, it's honestly probably just the mirror.
Yeah.
Like, you might board out Banished Companion in the mirror, honestly.
Maybe, but like, even still. Yeah. I probably boarded out on the draw in the mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Plasma Addict, there are only, I think, two cards that have ever been put in main decks where this effect matters, and that's Descend Upon the Helpless in, like, mild corner case scenarios, and Frailty if your opponent's smart and casts it while your Plasma Addict is untapped.
Yeah, or it could be something like a two-damage burn spell, like Void Flare.
Yeah, we've seen Shocks in the main deck.
I don't know, like, in
Rogar's
Unceasing Flames, the first one could do it.
But it's really been a long time since any of those popped up in the meta. I think that legitimately they might be smarter plays if Plasma Addicts start getting played.
Actually, but another thing is to consider, so, is auras do hose Plasma Addicts pretty hard.
That's what I'm about to bring up. Is I think you're very sad if you're playing against that
Featherfall,
Featherfall Aesthetic deck. If they just untap and just immediately aura up your Plasma Addict, especially because Plasma Addict holds auras. Really well.
That's pretty bad.
But I mean, you're also a burn deck. Like, there's a chance that you just say, "Cool, I'm gonna boss that charm to give it +2/+2, take it back." Swing for five.
Sound great.
Like, you know, you have options.
Yeah.
All right. Egg, the next one was on your list, so why don't you?
I will happily read this card off. The next one is, I don't know, how would you pronounce this? Cower?
I would pronounce it Cower.
I believe so.
Cower, End of Lies. This is an 8-mana planeswalker that does not cost 8 mana. And it has effects as if it did cost 8 mana. So we're going to talk about this, and I'll just briefly go over what it does. +2, reveals the top card of your library. If it's a permanent, you put it into play. It starts with 6 loyalty, so that gets him to 8 loyalty right off the bat. -4, exiles a non-creature permanent, any non-creature permanent. So you can kill lands with this, you can kill villainies with this, you can kill anything that's not a creature. Then you look at the top 4 cards, the top 4 cards of your library, and you can put a permanent from them onto the battlefield. So not only does it exile your opponent's best non-creature permanent, you get a permanent. No matter what you do on the first turn with Cower, you get a permanent. And then the ult is...
also mills the rest of the cards as well, which can be relevant.
Yes, that's true.
Sorry to interrupt.
The cards. No worries. The ult is an ultimate that just gets a bunch of permanents. It's probably not the thing that's going to draw you to Cower. But this is an 8-mana planeswalker that gets you a bunch of permanents, but then it has this really fun line of text, which says that it costs X less to cast, where X is the number of non-land permanents your opponents control. So this will, Most games cost like 4 or 5 mana, which is insane because it really does have the abilities of an 8 mana planeswalker. I have put this into exactly one deck and played it exactly once, and it was obscene when I played it. It cost me 2 mana to play. It immediately got another 5 mana planeswalker into play and sat there with 8 loyalty. It can exile other planeswalkers, but I didn't even need to do that because I just like wasn't under that much pressure when my opponent, or when I cast this. It's just the abilities on this planeswalker don't represent the amount of mana you'll end up actually having to spend, and I think people don't realize that this is not an 8 mana planeswalker.
We should probably mention this is a green card as well, because I don't think we did. I think the fact that it's a green card also means that this is going to be coming down like potentially even earlier. So like say it costs 5 mana, but you could easily be casting this on turn 4, right? Although the discount is
Oh my.
less likely to be huge in early turns. But still, I think, oh sorry.
Y'all, this entire time I read this as non-land, non-creature
No, it
permanent.
counts
Like,
creatures.
I thought it was like an artifact, enchantment, planeswalker hoser, but this thing just straight up is like a 4-drop versus creature decks.
Yeah,
Jesus.
and I want to be clear, it's not even non-token permanence. It's just like any token counts as 1 mana off of Kaur.
So one deck I've been working on with this card actually in it is a ramp deck that runs Performer of Growth and then uses Cower and Seismic Colossus as like your big spells, but you can cast them much earlier and get that Performer of Growth off potentially even on turn 3 or 4. But like besides that, it's also just like I think it's just a generically very strong card. You should be able to run it in most decks that are capable of generating like 5 mana. And you should be able to cast it most of the time, I think.
Yeah, I think that the way you should really evaluate this is, do I want this card in my deck if it costs 3 green-green?
It's also important to note that your deck does have to be mostly permanents. The +2 can whiff if you and just straight up do nothing if you don't hand a permanent. So that is something to consider. You probably don't want this in your like banned control deck unless it's like mostly planeswalkers.
I mean, it can still hit
Yeah,
lands,
that's still not
like
horrible. So even then
it's
it's
not
like
great,
it's worth
but it's still
considering
gettable.
even that in the worst case scenario.
Yeah, I think generically this card is, it's pushed for a 6 mana planeswalker, and it will most likely cost 6 at the maximum. So register this card in more green decks and you'll feel really happy about it. That's my suggestion to anyone who wants to play green planeswalkers.
Sweet, yeah.
All right. One other thing I would note, I've been messing around with a lot of Avatar of Plume Duval shells, just because I think since that card's a 4-drop, it actually is reasonable to play in a lot of mid-range decks. Which means that if you curve Avatar into this, you can immediately open Kaur. And like, this sounds magical Christmas landy, but both those cards are like kind of reasonable includes, and I don't think you lose a game where that happens. So you kind of have that like 1-2 punch combo.
That does not sound bad at all. I definitely like that idea.
Yeah, that actually sounds kind of obscene. Avatar is really good right now because it dodges all of the removal people like to play. If you
And
can.
the fact that it synergizes so well with Scions. It synergizes really well with a lot of our cheap walkers and a lot of our token generation. It just like randomly does a bunch of things.
Yeah, 100% agree.
All right. So I'll read off the next card, which is Eldritch Egg, which is probably the most busted egg in this format, but who's to say? Eldritch Egg is 2 and a black for a legendary artifact with 0 mana until end of turn. It becomes a copy of target permanent in a graveyard with converted mana cost 6 or less, except it's an artifact. Activate this ability only once each turn. It has no other card types. So, okay. This card, you look at it and you're like, I don't. It's hard to fully grasp how ludicrous this card is, until you start playing with it. So let's go with some base cases. It's a mana rock, as long as there's a mana producing land in a graveyard. If there's a Serene Prayer in a graveyard, your opponent can no longer cause you to lose life, because you just make it a copy of Serene Prayer and you can't remove counters from it because there are no counters on it. and since the last counter was never removed, you don't need to worry about it ever being sacrificed. Since it's still an artifact, it can become the copy of a Planeswalker and use plus abilities, but not be attacked down. it can become the copy of creatures with incredibly powerful static abilities. It can become the copy of six drops that you've, like, you know, discard into your graveyard, then you play this, and suddenly have the effect of a six drop, despite the fact you've only spent 3 mana on it. This card just does so, so, so much. It used to be more absurd. It's been hit with a couple of nerfs over time, but I think it's still criminally underplayed for how good it is.
Yeah, honestly, I really hadn't... I do remember coming across this in one of my many deck building sprees and looking at it and thinking just like, huh, I'm sure, like, I think my exact thought process on this when I saw this was, that seems like it could be pretty OP. I'm sure if there's a good deck, someone will have made it and it will exist, right? And I checked to see if there are any Eldritch decks. And I didn't really see one, so I was like, oh, I guess it's not good then. that was my thought process, but yeah, it honestly, I hadn't thought of a lot of those synergies until you listed them just now, but it's just like it's potentially plausible to just be like, oh, you can just run this card in a fair deck that happens to have a lot of cards that synergize like insanely well to moderately well with it, and it's a good card. Does that sound fair to you?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And I also think the point of you know, you looked at it and you were like, this looks OP, but you weren't like sure of all of the synergies. And then you kind of were like, well, no one else is playing it, so it's, you know, kind of wrote it off. I think that's a really common experience with not only this card, but basically every card this and above in this list. We're starting to get to the really degenerate ones, where I think the only excuse for them not seeing play is people don't know how to break them, and no one has tried yet.
I will say, I do consider myself like kind of a Johnny Spike. And that I like to win, but I like to win with cards nobody else is playing.
Yeah.
But I also don't really tend to build these kind of like super degenerate decks that just win. Like, that's not really my play style. I usually build decks that are like, oh, that was kind of stupid, but like not in like a I just win the game kind of way. I don't know if that made any sense. So this does not seem the kind of card that I would like be super, super psyched to build around, because it seems like a lot of the combos of this are like, oh, the game's just over, or I don't know. But maybe. Actually, I kind of want to take a look at this and see what synergies I can find now.
Yeah, this is the kind of card that makes my brain hurt as someone who likes building decks, because it doesn't immediately tell you what deck it wants to go in. Like, something like Cower, like we just had, is really easy to build around, because Cower says put permanents in your deck. Eldritch Egg says put cards with converted mana cost 6 or less in your deck, and there are like, and then ones that have abilities, but ones that have abilities that matter even if they're just artifacts, and ones that you want to switch between, and there's just a lot going on with
Eldritch Egg. And you need to get them in your graveyard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I am 100% certain that there are multiple busted decks with this card, and I'm 100% certain I will never build one because I cannot figure it out. I would be so happy to see the deck where Eldritch Egg is legitimately busted. Someone please build it so that I don't have to.
This is also the other thing I will say about this card and above is we're getting to the territory where I think there is a very real risk in devoting your time and effort into building around these cards and really, you know, designing a powerful deck, which is you are going to, if you find a deck powerful enough, you are going to spike an event. Like, there's no question that a lot of these are just that level of powerful for me, where the best deck in the format for these cards that we don't know exists yet can easily beat a lot of the decks we do know of power level wise. But I also think a lot of these cards currently have council attention in this weird semi-state of, okay, look, this is probably broken, but we don't know how yet, and we don't know how good it'll be in comparison to the rest of the format, so we don't actually want to take action. But if this is as good as we think it is, we're going to need to do something about this card. And I think that's the one real risk with brewing with Eldritch Egg, is the card is so powerful, just looking at it, that you should be able to break it in a way that is difficult to impossible for this format to handle, which means there's a good chance that all the time you sink into building the deck and iterating on the deck might be somewhat invalidated by card changes. I hope that's not the case, but I do think that's worth bringing up.
Yeah, I would make that argument for all of the top five, honestly. I think that between Kaur and Eldritch Egg is a really good cutoff for what cards you might just make a great deck and then immediately get your deck reworked.
Agreed, for sure.
Okay, so...
I can take the next one.
Yeah, please do.
Cool, all right. So number four, we got Skull of the World. It's a 4-mana legendary artifact, and it has one ability, which is tap, discard your hand. If two or more cards were discarded this way, search your library for a card and put it into your hand. Then shuffle your library. So at face value, what this does is it lets you trade in your whole hand for any card in your deck. But you have to have at least two or more cards that you're discarding. And it lets you do this theoretically every turn if you wanted to. But you have to have a way of getting back up to two cards every time. So I think the effect is obviously very powerful, especially as a repetitive effect that costs no mana. But I think that in order to truly make this card broken, you need to be abusing all of the things it does. Like the fact that it can find you any card in your deck that you want. So you're probably going to be finding a card that will enable some kind of combo. The fact that it discards your whole hand. So you're probably going to be abusing the fact that you're discarding cards in your graveyard. I don't know. I think Pip is the most equipped to talk about this card and what it can do.
Yeah, so this is a card that I started thinking about recently in the context of Small Luxuries, which is another suddenly very powerful card from Harvest Festival, which is 1 black, instant, you draw a card and lose 1 life, which isn't that scary. But it also has, when it is put into your graveyard from your hand or your library, notably not from the stack, so not if you cast it, return it to your hand at the beginning of the next end step. So that plus Skull of the World means that every turn you can tutor for a card of your choice. Because the draw for turn and the Small Luxury gives you 2 cards to discard to Skull of the World, and then the Small Luxury will return to your hand afterwards. So... one thing you can do with this is take infinite turns using Reflected Moment, which is a extra turn spell that shuffles back into your library. You need to figure out a way to win from that point, because you're slowly just discarding cards into your graveyard. You don't actually get the chance to draw additional lands or anything. But if you have an onboard source card advantage, or an onboard threat, or within your deck you have a card that free casts from the graveyard, or any of those things, you can start to assemble a game plan and go forward. I also just think that this card can make Reanimator very real. It is 4 mana, which is expensive, but immediately finding either a reanimation threat or a reanimation spell or interaction to break through your opponent's hate piece is very powerful. I don't know, in general, this card, it says repeatedly Demonic Tutor on it, which is really, really good.
For 0 mana.
A better word. Yeah. So I'm not exactly certain of how to break this. Otherwise, I would have tried to do it. This is very much outside of my range. But I think the potential ceiling of this card is ludicrous.
Yeah, I would not be at all surprised if we saw Skull of the World and Eldritch Egg go together in some absolutely degenerate deck. Because Eldritch Egg, Skull of the World, and Small Luxuries all look like they fit really well into the same shell to me.
Yeah, I agree with that. So moving on to other things that involve discarding a bunch of cards and winning the game. This next group of cards is like 4 or 5 cards, so we're cheating a little bit here. But Egg, why don't you tell us about the Dredge Package?
All right. So the Dredge Package is our neat little package of creatures that return themselves from the graveyard to the battlefield, our Narcomoebas. So
or either zero or one mana, generally, as well.
Yeah, yeah, they just, for zero or one mana, return themselves from the graveyard to the battlefield. Our truest Narcomoeba is Sewer Pack, which is a 1/1 for two mana. When it's put into your graveyard from your library, put it onto the battlefield. It also has some trinket text about pumping itself for each other sewer pack you have, which will every now and then be relevant. But the important part is that it reanimates itself when you mill it, and it does it for free. The other one that will reanimate itself is, Pip, help me with the name here, the one that costs one mana to reanimate when you discard it or another card.
Putrid Lurker.
Putrid Lurker, of course. Putrid Lurker is a 3-mana 3/1 with Death Touch and Haste. But when you discard it or another card, so when it's discarded or if it's in your graveyard and you discard another card, you can pay 1 black mana to return it from your graveyard to the battlefield. Then we have Ceaseless Stalker, which is a 2-mana 3/1 that whenever a creature enters the battlefield from your graveyard, it reanimates itself at the beginning of the next end step. So these are the engine of creatures that will reanimate themselves from your graveyard for free or for nearly free, and can just get you a giant army of creatures on the battlefield straight from your graveyard. They're particularly good with the new cycle of lands that we have, our Torment Lands, which will let you play a Torment Land, which comes into play untapped if you either take 3 damage, sacrifice a non-land permanent, or discard a card. If you do that on turn 1, you can discard Putrid Lurker and immediately use that mana to reanimate it, which is, just one of the many stupid things this deck will do. It dodges most kinds of interaction because you can't counter it. It dodges a lot of removal because most of them will just come back. It really dodges a lot of interaction that isn't just straight graveyard hate. And I'm going to let someone who has just recently played against this deck talk more about what it feels like to lose to it.
Okay, so yeah, I will. I think there are a couple more cards that are actually really important to this package that you haven't mentioned, so I'm just going to mention those real quick, if that's cool.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so the two cards that I should also mention are Recurring Abomination, which is from Lovesong. It is a 3-mana 3/3 in black. Whenever it deals combat damage to an opponent, you get to return a creature card from your graveyard to your hand. But the most important ability is that you can pay a black and sacrifice a creature to return it from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. And then the other one is from World at War. It's called Unbound Dremora. It is a 4-mana 4/3 in black. It can't block, but who cares? When it enters the battlefield, each player discards a card. And whenever you sacrifice a creature, if that's the second creature you've sacrificed this turn, it comes back from your graveyard to the battlefield for free. So the reason I mentioned these two cards is because they actually synergize very well with the other three, like, kind of reanimator, like self-reanimator creatures that were mentioned before by Egg. Some particular interactions that are very powerful are Recurring Abomination with Ceaseless Stalker. You can sacrifice Ceaseless Stalker to return Recurring Abomination, and then Ceaseless Stalker will see the abomination returned and will return itself at the beginning of the next end step. So basically, that is an infinite stream of all creatures, and your opponent will not be able to deal with that unless they are able to completely clear your board. Then you also have Unbound Dremora. Whenever you're sacrificing creatures with your Recurring Abomination, if you happen to dredge multiple abominations, then you can kind of chain those together, and every single turn, like, return an abomination, sack the abomination to return another abomination. Then you bring back as many Dremoras as you have dredged, and then it'll attack your opponent's hand. You can also get 3 creatures to sacrifice with Sewer Pack. And, like, basically just there's so many interlocking synergies between these 5 creatures that it just creates this onslaught of, creatures that pretty much all attack for 3 or more, starting on turn 1, and it comes out very, very easily on turn 1 if your deck is playing all Torment Lands and Fetches. So, honestly, playing against this deck is pretty much have graveyard hate or lose. Like, I don't think many decks will say this, but, like, it's basically like, okay, can you mess with my graveyard? Okay, GG, have better luck next game. You know, like, that's pretty much the experience, my experience of playing against this deck. And I have been able to defeat it. I had a game where I had three Seal the Tombs, and judicious and careful use of those Seal the Tombs allowed me to win the game. But like you need to have a way to interact with the graveyard, because this deck will just you need to be able to X out their creatures or something, because this deck just straight up aggro you down. It'll outvalue you if you stabilize the board, and it'll do that starting on turn one. I think this deck is very real. I think if it shows up in the GP, everyone needs to run graveyard hate or you will just die.
So I'm gonna run a slightly contrary take.
Okay.
So for those of you who haven't been checking out deck lists, Chembeck recently ran this deck and put up a very compelling 4-1 finish. I was that one. I was playing Podlight, and it turns out that when your deck can reliably tutor up a copy of Vibrant Rapture, you can actually kill this deck's entire base of one toughness creatures. And if you combine that with having an actually effective follow-up, so I had one time where I Vibrant Raptured, killed my entire board, killed Chembeck's entire board, generated like 8 petals, and went Scion of Torrents into Aethermancer's Familiar. And that was enough. That did put me in a good position.
That should be enough, yeah.
if it wasn't, you would be very worried. But I do want to present the take that if you just have an insane... If you have a board wipe plus an insane amount of follow-up pressure, you can actually run over this deck.
Yeah.
This a lot of these cards, the addition of Recurring Abomination and Unbound Dromora are pretty recent, but the rest of this deck has been legal for an actual year. A year and a half, maybe even, for some of them.
I actually think that the Torment Lands are probably the biggest addition to this deck.
That's true. Torment Lands mean it has to run so many fewer bad discard outlets.
Yeah.
But we had some pretty good discard outlets, and I just think the combination of Ceaseless Stalker Sewer Pack can actually run over a lot of decks to begin with.
Right.
And we have some other combo-y approaches you can do. You can also run that creature where if you reanimate it, you reanimate your entire graveyard instead, and some reanimation spells and a bunch of things that self-mill and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
We have a card that's very clearly a homage to Dread Return, which to my knowledge is a card that's still banned in actual Modern.
Which card is that?
So the card is called Dread Resurrection.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It's flashback, one black, sack two creatures, and you lose life equal to the... you return target creature from your graveyard to the battlefield and lose life equal to its cost. So,
yeah.
If you put creatures into play for free from your graveyard, you can then very easily also mill over this and say, cool, I'm going to reanimate this big scary thing I decided to run in my deck. I think Chumbeck had a very good build of this deck. I also suspect you can refine it further.
Yeah.
And I think a refined version of this deck is one of the scarier linear decks in this format, if not the scariest.
100% agree.
For sure.
All right, so the next card we have on our list, Dodger, can you take this one away?
Sure, yeah. So we got Entellan Erasure. It is 3 mana for a blue sorcery. Each player shuffles their hand and graveyard into their library, and then draws 7 cards. So far we have Time Twister, which is a very good card, some might say. The kicker is that if you didn't control a blue legendary creature or planeswalker as you cast the spell, then you have to discard 3 cards, and then the spell exiles itself.
So, one thing I want to draw attention to is it's not you have to exile 3 cards from your hand.
Yeah.
You have to discard cards. And we just got finished talking about how there's some kind of busted things you can do with discarding cards. Now, I'm not saying you should run this in Dredge. You very clearly shouldn't run this in Dredge.
Yeah.
But this card has shown up in Stormlist before and was incredibly powerful there. there is risk in giving your opponent seven cards when you're only getting four, but if you kill them fast enough, it doesn't matter. I don't think we currently have any like combo decks that have blue planeswalkers they'd want to run alongside this, but if that ever becomes the case, this is just Time Twister. And draw sevens in general are incredibly powerful. This card has seen effectively no play since whenever Herzy last played Landstorm, and I think this card got cut from Landstorm. I might be wrong on that front, but this card used to basically only see play in one really niche Storm deck, and even then it wasn't that insane in that Storm deck. The only other deck it saw play in, to my knowledge, was this weird kind of Owling Mine aggro style deck, and that should kind of tell you people have not sufficiently experimented with nearly Time Twister.
Yeah, it's. I think what you just pointed out is that it's actually sometimes just Time Twister with upside. If you care about, you know, getting certain cards in your graveyard, I think that also the hoop of having a blue legendary creature has become easier than ever.
Oh my god! Yeah, wait, I forgot that we also
we have cards like that are just good, like Ponya or. Tsuzume Ashiriko, I'm sure there are like a billion others I'm forgetting about, Lord Rokai. But like there are plenty of very cheap blue legendary creatures that you can just play in a deck that are good, right? And then you can just run this card as Time Twister, which is also a pretty solid card. May or may not be part of a group of nine cards that tend to be strong, but I'm not sure about that one.
So yeah, as far as I'm aware, Time Twister also very good with Moxen, which we did discuss that we have at least one up in this format.
For sure, for sure.
But yeah, there's not really much more that I can say about this. This is almost literally Time Twister, and Time Twister is an insane card. You just have to be able to build decks where Time Twister is insane.
Yeah, 100% agree. I doubt that I'm going to be building with this because I just generally don't like to play Storm very much, but...
If it you is do, nice to know that it exists. Yeah, like if you're looking at this and you're like, man, I really hate that there's no spell-based combo decks in this format. Be the change you want to see in the world.
Play. I don't really want to see that change, TBH. I'm going to be the lack of change that I want to see in the world.
I want an excuse to start running Counter Magic again. Please make me have to start running Counter Magic again. I miss those days. So, number one on our list of the most busted cards in the format you're not playing, TM, is Kefthra's Will. So, very much in a similar vein to Until an Erasure, Kefthra's Will is very similar to a card that's I've heard pretty okay. So, Kefthra's Will is two and a black. Until end of turn, you may cast card or you may play cards from your graveyard. If a card would enter your graveyard this turn, exile it instead. And then exile Kefthra's Will. That's literally Yawgmoth's Will. However, it also has a little thing that says whenever you cast a card from your graveyard this way, you lose two life. So, that is a slight bummer. And that looks like a big drawback. I would argue it isn't. If you saw the Underworld Breach style decks that terrorized Legacy for the brief period of time Wizards decided to have better Yawgmoth's Will be legal there, you can actually get away with a lot of broken things, even if you only have to cast a couple of cards to do so. So the other thing that's important here is the cards only get exiled if they go back to your graveyard. I don't think a fair Yawgmoth's Will has a home in MSEM, especially one that costs still three mana and is probably going to cost you two to four life. But one thing that you'll see sometimes in Vintage is people cast Yawgmoth's Will, play out a couple of artifacts from their graveyard, and then kind of just pass the turn and just accept that it was, you know, three mana, get back two Moxen and a Lotus. Like, that's just...
I mean, that's still a very good card.
Yeah. We don't have Lotus. We don't have Moxen. We don't have the things that traditionally make Yawgmoth's Will go... Oh, we don't have Dark Ritual. We don't have the things that make Yawgmoth's Will go from, okay, this looks good, to, okay, this has to be banned in Legacy very quickly and, has to be restricted in Vintage. But I also think just the fact that unlike Until and Erasure, which has seen fringe playing combo decks, we have not seen a single combo deck play Kefthra's Will yet. And given that Ebb and Flow was literally banned for Storm decks that could turn two, I'm kind of looking at this and saying, okay, well, this is you know, less mana than Ebb and Flow, and it doesn't chain as well, and yeah, you have to lose life, but what if you have things that offset that life? I haven't looked too deeply into the format. I know we don't have an Aether, what is it called? What's the big water tower from Kaladesh that gains you life? Aether Flux Reservoir.
Yeah, that's
the one. We don't have that. That would break this in half.
Absolutely.
As much as a 4-mana artifact into a 3-mana sorcery is broken in half. but that's the kind of thing I'd be on the lookout for, is do we have cheap spells that gain you more life?
Oh, okay, so one that I would posit, and I'm not saying that this is good, but I believe there's one called, like, Decree of the Gods or something. I forget what... I know it ends with of the Gods.
Oh, the red, black, white thing that, like, exiles cards from the top of your library.
Yeah, so something that I was trying to do before was something stupid where you run this with Cragbound Crusher, which is the 17 converted mana cost creature. So on average, this will probably gain you about 20 life. I did the math. and it could potentially gain you like 33 life if you flip it over right away. But like, that is, if you want a card that will gain you just a buttload of life, you could run Cragbound Crusher in your deck, and you could run whatever of the gods. I forget the name. It's like, it's a Mardu spell, but like, I'm not saying that's good. Like,
annoy the gods? It's something negative that you shouldn't be doing to the gods.
Appeal the gods? Yeah, I don't really remember. Oh, here it is. Provoke the gods.
Provoke the gods.
Yeah, so what it does specifically is it's an instant that costs a white, a black, and a red. You choose a card name. You reveal cards on the top of your library until you reveal a card with a chosen name. Then you put it into your hand. You gain life equal to twice its converted mana cost, and you exile all of their cards revealed this way. And you lose one life for each of those cards. So basically, if you name Cragbound Crusher, the expected number of cards you reveal before hitting the Crusher is somewhere between like 10 and 14, given like if you're running like 4 in your deck. So that would mean that you expect Provoke the Gods to gain you about 20 life.
So so you gain a bunch of life,
yeah.
And then notably, you now have a Provoke the Gods in your graveyard.
Also true. So you could just do it again.
Yeah, which means you could cast it and find your actual paper.
Of course, this is a 3-mana spell that you're casting on top of your other 3-mana spell, so...
But you can cast Provoke the Gods on the opponent's end step.
That is true. So you could just gain a bunch of life before you go off.
Yeah.
Which is another thing. So, like, maybe there's something there. I don't know. There's probably other more efficient ways, like, both in terms of mana and deck space, for having a way to just gain a bunch of life so you can, like, do stupid stuff with the Kefthar's Will, but, like, this is something else to consider, you know. Like there are tools to make Kefthar's Will enabled, and then you just have Yawgmoth's Will.
Yeah. And notably, you have to pay life. So unfortunately, you can't. One thing I briefly thought is, if it was you lose 2 life, one thing you could do is combo it with a card earlier on this list, which is Eldritch Egg, where you have Eldritch Egg become a copy of Serene Prayer, and now you don't actually lose life. Since it's pay life, that doesn't quite work the same way.
Yeah.
But it does. This is just a card where I think the way to abuse it is perhaps the least obvious of the top 5, other than the absolute certainty that this is abusable, and if you abuse it, this is just entirely broken.
There's also enough rituals in the format that you can, like,
much mana when you cast this.
It's worth mentioning that, like, it's not like the support for a Storm deck isn't there.
You could easily go, Flatboat Arson on 2, then turn 3, cast, like, a couple rituals, each of which are now +2 because of the Flatboat, cast this, and as long as you've cast, so, you know, it's 3 mana, as long as there's 2 +2 rituals in your graveyard, it has net you 1 mana.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very easy to see how just it can refill you while you're in the middle of going off.
Agreed.
The one other thing in a very similar vein to that, though, is this is kind of the only reason to be in black for Storm decks.
Mm-hmm.
But Storm decks now have 2 different really good Goblin Electromancer effects they can get entirely in red. So maybe Storm goes from being a blue-red deck, being in blue for cantrips and Master of Elements, which was historically the best Goblin Electromancer, and then it becomes just red black.
Well, also, if you are
some cantrips, though,
if you are blue red and you're looking to run just like this card as well, there is a certain artifact that can net you mana, filter your mana, and draw you an extra card. But I'm not sure what that artifact is.
Oh, and notably, since Sacrifice, you can replay it from your graveyard with K-Will.
Yeah, so Wilted Lotus is the card I'm talking about. Wilted Lotus should fit perfectly in this kind of deck. Because as we said before, sometimes the play is just you play the Yogg-Will and then you play the Lotus. And you can sort of do that here too.
Hey, if we're paying a bunch of life,
Imperial Mox is also good. Yeah.
Imperial Mox gets better.
Yeah.
This card is obviously... It's one of those cards that just, like, the power level is obviously insane. The power level of just recasting ever cast this game and possibly more is nuts. But I agree that this is one of the hardest to break. It's one of the hardest to build even a good deck that plays it, because I think most people who try to build decks that want to play this are going to end up killing themselves before they win the game. So this is, I think, the biggest and best deck building challenge on the list, and I think that's why it's definitively worth our number one slot.
Yeah, the one related note to that I say before I'm kind of out of things worth saying is my hot take is I think the best K-Will deck runs two, maybe three copies of it. And just relies on either tutors, because we actually have some kind of nuts tutors that are legal in this format, although don't run this in the same deck as Grim Tutor, and please don't find it with Fateful Journey. Neither of those things is going to go well. You don't want to draw four copies. You don't want to draw multiple copies of this, and you can make a functioning Storm deck that kills without ever casting Will.
Yeah.
The thing is, Will gets you in these positions where you just don't have enough cards in hand, you don't have enough, you don't have enough resources, and then you top deck it, and you look at your graveyard full of all your opponent's, like, spells that they stripped from you, or, you know, unsuccessful attempts are going on, and say, oh, I can kill them. If this resolves, I'm going to get there. And that's the insane thing about Yawgmoth's Will, is sometimes you do busted things because, you know, you tutor for it because it's the best mana production line you have. And sometimes you just draw it and you realize, oh, they're dead now. Maybe consider running this alongside the mini Gifts Ungiven we have, since I've heard Gifts Ungiven for Yawgmoth's Will and a thing I can cast off Yawgmoth's Will that should kill you is really good.
Yeah, it's a power play for sure.
All right, that's all I have for this list. There were a bunch of honorable mentions we looked at, but for a variety of reasons, they didn't make it on here, either because people have been playing them or because, while they're very strong cards, the latter half of this list makes it clear we're not joking around when we're saying that these cards are busted. but I would be very excited to see people trying to break these cards, even if some of them lead to gameplay that I personally will struggle against.
Yeah.
Honestly, in my opinion, if you get a card nerf, that's like a badge of honor. Like that is the highest honor a deck builder can achieve.
Yeah, I think that is the healthiest way of looking at it. It's something I mentioned this in chat recently, but one thing that I definitely struggled with, I think this was before I took a break from the format, was when Worlds Away came out, and I just immediately set to work breaking all of the cards in it because it had a lot of different cards I was really excited about that I was certain were overtuned. For instance, By the Sea used to be one mana. Void Flare used to deal four damage. There's all sorts of cards in way. Intrepid used to be a 5/5 Vigilant Flyer.
It was a
what?
My God.
Yeah, so if you weren't around for those days...
I knew about the one mana By the Sea and the four damage Void Flare. I did not know about the Vigilance 5/5 Intrepid.
Turns out when Intrepid has Vigilance, you can't actually play aggro decks into it unless those aggro decks can abuse Intrepid. Vol of Ritualist used to be a one drop and was our best mana dork in the
format. I remember the one mana Vol of Ritualist. That card was sweet.
That card is really cool, but also absolutely not okay.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm not denying that there is a mental drain to spending time building a deck or playing a deck and getting its parts nerfed, especially if you really enjoyed the gameplay that that deck generated. Like, the Bug Flash deck I played that had one mana by the sea was some of the most fun Magic I'd played in MSCM up until that point, and it felt like I was doing Legacy tier stuff. It was not okay. And I think coming to terms with that and kind of realizing how to enjoy the format while accepting that playing with good cards sometimes means those good cards get nerfed or banned. But enjoying the time you're investing in them in the moment, and also taking pride in the fact that, yeah, I found something that no one else did, and I broke something no one else did, and forever now they're going to hear, wait, that card used to be even better, and I'll be one of the people that got the chance to play with it when it was that dumb.
Yeah, I think as long as the card isn't completely nerfed out of playability, I would not feel bad at all, personally, just because there's so many things to do with this card pool. And personally, I enjoy building decks a lot. So, like, half the fun of making a new deck is actually just building it. So that's why I wouldn't be too upset. But I can see why someone would be. It's very, like, it's very reasonable to get attached to something you make yourself and have a lot of success with.
Yeah, for sure. Although that being said, I also think there's something to finding something that's way too powerful for the format and showing people and then having it nerfed. I'm always happy when I find something and realize, hey, this is not okay, because that means that no one will try to abuse it. And it also means that just more games of Magic get to be fun and close.
Yeah, absolutely. MSCM is at its best when there's a relatively flat power level and when you aren't forced to play certain strategies in order to remain competitive. And the fact that, unlike Wizards of the Coast, we have the ability to rebalance cards just gives us such a huge edge there, where we can make adjustments. We can say, oh, wow, that was definitely meant to be 4 mana. I'm not sure when I made it 3 mana. That should probably be a once per turn. I remember one time that it was like, theory crafting back in the old days of villainy being not being a perennial trigger, so it could draw any number of cards. And I was kind of sitting back and I was trying to figure out, like, why non-villainy control decks weren't working, and why the only control decks that seemed to work were counter Magic based control decks. And I realized it was indirectly because of villainy and not the way that you would initially think. The conclusion I came to was, okay, so in order to beat villainy, mid-range decks need to jam so much value into every single spell they have. So, like, if an old arty study resolved, that was a 5-for-1, straight up. We had various creatures that saw play that were, like, 3 or 4-for-1s. And I was like, oh, the reason these cards have to be played and you can't play just generic mid-range, like, beaters is because villainy turns every single spell you cast into roughly a 2.5-for-1. Because, you know, you cast Exeunt, you spell one card, it kills one card. But you also get to Shock, which sometimes kills another creature, or sometimes hits face. And you also draw a card. And then if that Shock killed a creature, you draw another card. And so you very quickly end up, like, 3-for-1-ing people every time you cast this any black spell.
I'm sorry, I'm just realizing the Arty study got nerfed.
Yeah.
I was wondering why that card didn't see any play anymore.
Yeah. that was part of the main Madness patch. But, so, you know, when I sat down as a designer, I realized, oh, this is having an unintended stifling effect on archetypes it was never meant to impact. Just by virtue of pushing out mid-range decks that could beat people to death, and forcing mid-range decks to be these slow, durably value piles, which in turn punished control decks, which in turn rewarded linear combo decks. And so I definitely don't regret that nerf. Even though it really hurt the type of villainy I enjoyed playing, even though it was a card that was very near and dear to my heart, it was what was best for the format. And I think people still think villainy is too good, so clearly it was a good nerf.
Yeah.
I'd rather not get into the discussion of whether or not villainy is too good, because I feel like that'll take another half an hour.
Yeah, we have a 2-hour hot take on that. Whenever Kai gets around to editing that, I'm very excited to embrace that upon the world.
And I'm pretty sure that my opinion is wrong, but it, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I have my opinion, and I'm pretty sure it's wrong, but I think it's fine.
We'll make sure to have you on for the next hot take.
Yeah, there were a lot of hot opinions on Villainy. You were not the only one with an opinion.
To be fair, I think my opinion is pretty mild. I would classify it as like a 2 on the
chili pepper scale.
Yeah, whatever the name of the unit is called.
Oh, Scovilles.
Scoville, yeah. 2 Scovilles.
All right. So I think that's all we got for today, but thank you everyone for tuning in. It was great to have both of you too.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun. Great.
All right. And I will see you all next time we get around to recording a podcast episode.
Fabulous.
Hey, bye-bye.